Joined on the programme now by Lucas Meehan, a qualified nurse and has worked too as a healthcare assistant for 4 years now. And we're, I suppose, reflecting on that RT Investigates programme during the week, which found a scandalous situation in two care homes down the country. Lucas, thanks so much for joining us. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Registered healthcare assistant in Northern Ireland. Can you draw any comparisons between the situation in the north versus the south?
Well, what I can see very clearly is that in the north, there is the Northern Irish Social Care Council, the NISC. And basically that is that every healthcare assistant that does work in care homes is regulated and has a code of conduct to adhere to. So these wouldn't really be more in the hospitals, but more for care homes, as they recognise that, you know, in care homes, your healthcare assistants really are majority of the time more so with the clients and the people living in the care home. And this is able to make a public-facing register where anyone, a member of the public, can look you up and see if you're a registered professional to be working there. So, like, and we don't have that in the Republic.
So what is the situation in the Republic, Lucas?
Well, currently none. There is no situation at all. So recently, whenever SIP2 was actually, which is their trade union, was discussing this, there was nearly more than 50% of them. Actually, it was 96% of healthcare assistants actually supported the creation of a public regulation. So whenever the government is not doing something, creating a current regulator such as this, it's really showing failures on the government to listen to healthcare assistants. But the issue that I currently have that I would be drawn up is that the lack of, again, regulation, but the lack to get on the register. So there should be a minimal educational requirement, if not 1 year of a training requirement and moving on. Because realistically now, because of the lack of register down south, the care homes that have had these healthcare assistants that have treated their clients in such a poor way, this is going to be handled entirely by the care home. So people are saying, well, HICWA will be able to regulate. HICWA solely regulates the actual building of the home. It doesn't regulate the staff. And the nurses there will be regulated by and Board Altranis, the NMBI. So the healthcare assistants are solely going to be left to be disciplined by the care home and not an actual public-facing register.
So what might happen if such allegations were made against staff in a care home in the north then? Just trying to see how the different structures there would help in, I don't know, addressing what we've seen, but also as much, I think you've talked about how it might prevent it happen. But what would happen next if this were a care home in the north that was exposed like this?
Well, there's three different main regulatory bodies that would regulate in healthcare settings in care homes. So there's the Nursing and Midwifery Council, which is the northern equivalent to the Nursing Board. You have RICWA in the north. Here we have, in the south, we have HICWA. RICWA and HICWA. And then you have the NISC, Northern Irish Social Care Council, who regulate the healthcare assistants. So that there is the three main bodies in the north. So first of all, they would all come in and regulate if there was a specific breach, depending on who did what or what the actual allegation was. And, you know, what we've seen in those care homes down south is that all three should be involved.
And what happens, I presume, is it sets an environment that situations like this are less likely to happen.
Well, really,
it creates that space where you know what I mean, because of the high level of training. It's not just going to be medical training, it's going to be, you know, bedside manner and all that type of stuff. It's far less likely to happen with such a rigorous process in the north, I would feel, than it might in the south.
100%. I mean, at the end of the day, then the Northern Irish Social Care Council can strike an individual off where they cannot practice. So if I went to another care home and applied for work, they would be able to see outright that I have if it was me that convicted or did something that was completely unacceptable and I was reported and I was stricken off, I cannot work again as a healthcare assistant, which is only right. Mm. My current issue now is that these healthcare assistants can move about to another care home.
I just wonder, do we recognise those strike-offs in the south? It'd be interesting.
We don't.
Right.
No.
So if I wanted to become a healthcare assistant, and I mean literally me in this case, Lucas, you know, providing the age demographics and all that, but if I wanted to become a healthcare assistant in the Republic, what would the process be for me, literally me?
So realistically, most care homes ask for either 3 years experience or a level 5 QQI. But many of them can hire off the bat and train you themselves. And this is kind of the issue that, while yes, I understand how important it is, that how important care homes are in being able to provide training 100%, there should be a specific minimal educational requirement going into this. These are caring for our mothers or fathers or grandparents.
So realistically, Lucas, if the nursing home, a private nursing home, were of the mind, I could just go straight onto shift, really, and do my training as part of it. I could go into the caring of a listener's, you know, elderly parents just straight in. I wouldn't necessarily be, I would not have to pass a test as to how to pick them up off the ground or how to... Well, okay, that's problematic.
Which is another issue. But we seen that girl who was the whistleblower in the care home. Her interview in total lasted 13 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And the first question she was asked after six other questions was, when can you start? What is your availability? Have you any holidays? This isn't acceptable at all. I mean, but when we're paying our care assistants bare near minimum wage, again, another thing that is not acceptable for the amount of work, the backbreaking work that is currently going on, the level of burnout is over 80%. That is according to SIPTU, their trade union. It's clear we're not listening to healthcare assistants. And even on the show, what I was so disappointed is that they didn't, on the RT Investigate show, there wasn't one healthcare assistant on the show talking about what was going on.
Mm.
There was consultant physicians and professors of nursing, which is 100% I recognise is so important, but not one healthcare assistant was asked to be able to break down what was currently going on in the show.
What is there a variance in north and south as to how many residents or patients or whatever the phraseology is best to use per healthcare assistant, if you know what I mean?
No. Well, and this is another thing that could be very much so dragged out. So we've seen that in one of the care homes, one of the care managers was saying that the safe ratio is 7-1, which is not true. So there is actually no real limit, which is another thing that's wrong, because as everyone would know, anyone who works in healthcare would be able to tell you safe staffing saves lives. And I mean, say for example, it even was 1-7. If someone goes on break, someone now has 14 patients to look after. And God forbid, three people buzz at the same time, which we've seen happen again in the care home in Portlaoise, that there was three or four people buzzing at the same time. And if someone's on break for maybe half an hour, you're left by yourself and another person maybe who has their own 14. And now you have to, if you want to combine it, you now have 28. And 28 people for maybe two staff is, again, isn't safe at all. I mean, and you're looking after people maybe with dementia or Alzheimer's, and dementia itself is just an umbrella term, but dementia, people with dementia who are maybe thinking that they can walk when maybe they can't, and they have to use the toilet, so they'll get up themselves, and you need to keep a close eye on these people, and because they are still people and this is their home, they still have a right to privacy, which they did not, you know, get at all, because they were keeping them in the one day room for over 6 hours. And there was no understanding of what they wanted to do, what they wanted to try to do. And when they were clicking out the activities that they had carried out throughout the day, they said talking to staff is an activity, which it's not.
Wow, okay. I mean, people will notice that maybe some of the accents were foreign accents, if I could put it like that there. But I mean, that was inevitable, isn't it? Because we're incredibly, certainly in the South, we're very reliant on foreign workers who were low paid, and it would make you wonder too that the level of training, given the example you gave earlier on, you know, the sixth question, when can you start? So come to Ireland, the wage might seem good to you at the time, but it's tough old work, perhaps with not enough support and training.
But that is what is specifically clear. So we are having people then maybe being guard of edit, and not knowing maybe their home history, if they've worked, because again, there's no public facing register. So we can't actually determine how long maybe they have been working in their own home, if they were internationally qualified. So like nurses coming into the country, you'd be able to see how long they've been working for, as there's a public facing register for nurses in every country. But for healthcare assistance, you know, we are falling down behind that European average. I mean, when Finland, Germany, Belgium, France all regulate healthcare assistance, have a public-facing register with a minimal educational requirement, we're really falling behind the EU standard here.
So what do we do then, Lucas? I mean, I know this is sort of, you know, there's people higher up the scale than us to decide this, but, you know, like there's a few things confuse me. You've got big companies coming in and buying up nursing homes, and they say, you know, there's good money in it. It's a growth area because we have too few beds for the amount of over 65. So that sort of paints a picture that might make it seem like an attractive area. But then we hear of other nursing homes closing down, that they can't, you know, they're just breaking even, that there's no money in it for them whatsoever. So that would sort of suggest there's not money for extra training and extra wages. So if we're going to look at this sector in the whole, it needs a massive overhaul then, surely, because we don't want, people don't have the money to pay for it necessarily, right? Privately, they might not even have the capacity within their wealth through the Better Care Scheme to pay for it. So is it government subvention on a big scale? I don't know what happens in other countries, but do the government have to invest heavily and contribute to the care of people then? I don't know. It's so complicated.
Well, I'm still waiting. Fine Gael promised in their last election that they would have abolished university fees by this stage, and we're still waiting on that. So this is just one of the things that the government should be doing. Now, educational requirements, you know, at level five, it shouldn't be costing the government too much to be able to put people through. But the main issue is...
How much do you pay someone per hour who's got a level five QQI?
Minimum wage.
But you know who's going to do it?
Oh, but this
you
is
know, we're seeing a massive exodus from childcare for that reason.
Well, I mean, the Minister for Health, I mean, when she was in Donegal, I mean, she was looking around the new hospital that was currently being built next to the hospital and the new nursing tertiary training area around the ETB. And I mean, this is the same kind of stuff that we should be doing for healthcare assistance, tertiary training. Realistic, you know, the same as kind of the LCA or Leaving Cert Applied, which is earn as you learn. And I mean, this is realistically going back to nursing roots, which was always in-house training, but also being monitored by a regulatory body at the same time. And this is the kind of things that we should be doing, you know, a training portfolio where it's the same as nurses, where it's you have to see a certain number of things to be able to practice before you can practice by yourself. And I mean, for years, Pat O'Trebane has been talking about even care homes, you know, and the neglect that was currently going on during the COVID-19 staff shortages, abuse. And the government actually didn't do anything about it at the time. And
well,
you know,
they did to some extent, because through the HSE, they headhunted staff out of nursing homes to work in acute hospitals. Well, I know that's not what I'm not saying. That's what you're referencing, huh?
Safeguard, but the safeguard legislation has been
okay.
In Dallas.
No, I get that. I just that irked me at the time, and I just thought an opportunity to mention it there. You see, my problem that I have with this is that there's a commitment that HIC was going to go in, you know, ride in on their steely horse and sort this all out, and then it will pitter away. And my concern is that nothing actually improves. And I'm getting so many contacts, a worrying amount of contacts of people who've are currently having bad experiences in nursing homes in Donegal or have had very bad experiences. And what do we do, Lucas, to make sure that we don't fall victim of the news cycle that I'm a part of here, that we think HICWA fixes it all until the next big expose? Because, you know, I think we need to be taking a social responsibility here as a people.
100%. I mean, these aren't just random people. These are family members and who have either sold their home to the state to pay nearly €1,400 a week in care home fees and are then being treated like they are. So what I would recommend for someone to do if they are currently looking to escalate something, talk to staff, escalate it. You can ring HICWA itself. Now, just HICWA is different around the country. There are different people for different counties. And obviously the staff in Portlaoise have definitely failed in HICWA whenever it took them 14 weeks to investigate a care home after multiple rounds of concerns were escalated. Again, this is something that the Department of Health should have been doing whenever the Minister for Older People was discussing this. I was very happy to hear it, but he said that HICWA was set now a internal review of what currently went on due to the fact that he requested that to take place. HICWA should have been doing that automatically themselves.
How does HICWA, with their often announced inspections, prevent or find out that a dementia patient is screaming for help from their wet bed? That's what bothers me. You know, like, we could get a few HICWA reports that say everything's rosy, but that, how does that drill into making sure that if you went into some place at a certain type of day with a hidden camera, that you wouldn't still see this type of activity?
Well, I think it's clear that the HICWA now needs to increase the number of unannounced visits, especially in areas that have been maybe reported, because this wasn't just out of the blue. Both of these care homes had been previously reported and they weren't actually taken up on properly. Both of the reports on these care homes specifically mentioned short staffing. And I mean, whenever you're left maybe 1 to 8 patients, so I mean, once one member of staff, maybe 8 patients, realistically, Greg, all of these 8 patients might need 2 people for personal care. So what am I supposed, like, it shouldn't be that their kind of thought process of 1 to 8, it should be 2 to 16, realistically, if we're going to talk about this. It should be two members of staff should be now, it should automatically be.
That makes sense. I see exactly where you're coming from. Lucas, thanks for giving us the insight and helping me anyway, and hopefully the listeners better understand, you know, even that last comment you made that, you know, 1 in 8, 2 in 16 is much better than 1 in 8. And I wouldn't have figured that out unless you explained it so well. It's still not enough, but I understand exactly what you were saying. Lucas, brilliant to chat to you. I don't think we've talked before. I appreciate your insight. Thanks so very much indeed.
That's absolutely perfect, Greg.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Lucas. Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for all of your contacts today. I just do hope you know that we don't take them for granted and they're very much appreciated. Okay, a familiar face and voice sits before me. Katie McGee. Oh, no. What have I done? I've broken the computer. I've taken a screenshot. Yeah, everything's good.
I thought you meant that as in... I'm here. Oh no, what have I done?
No, not yet. I tell you, I hit something and something happened, but it seems to have resolved itself. How are you keeping? Katie, a active age coordinator at Carra House Family Resource Centre. You really settled into your new role there, I've heard.
Yeah, yeah.
And all going
good.
Well. So how's life?
Very good, yeah, very good. Very busy. Mm. We took a trip to Belfast this week on Tuesday. We went to the Titanic Museum, which was a really, really good trip.
They've tarted that up a little bit, haven't they? Or jigged it up, sorry, I should say.
I've never been before.
I think they've done something to it.
But it is definitely worth a see if anybody wants to go up and have a look at it, because it's quite phenomenal and it's actually very emotion provoking.
Right.
Yeah,
because I think it humanizes the tragedy, does it? Because
definitely
a
does.
Lot of people, it's entertainment, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but they have, like, which is quite phenomenal, an original life jacket, and it's in like a glass case thing, but I think there's only so many of them. I think there's 12 of them in the world or something like that.
Okay.
But yeah, so yeah, anyway, so that's what we did this week, kind of social inclusion trip, so that was fantastic. Mm. And we have senior summer camp coming up during the summer and loads of different things going on. But next,
just in relation to that stuff, how, if anyone's listening and they go, wow, okay. So is it older people that you took on the trip to Belfast, for an example?
Mostly.
A mixture of people?
Mostly. Now, what the funding was for more in line with kind of social inclusion.
Yeah, okay.
In my role dealing with older people or senior services, you deal with an awful lot of social isolation. Mm. So it kind of fell in line with that. So I kind of took it on as something that you could do with a bit of a mixed
group.
But
even the likes of the summer camps going forward and other initiatives that the Carra House Family Resource Centre has, you know, people are coming of age or maybe people have been widowed or something and they would like to maintain sort of social connections and all that type of stuff. How does someone find out about more about sort of the Carra House Family Resource Centre and its work specifically with older people, Katie?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they can contact me anyway at befriending@carrahouse.ie is my email address, and I have a mobile number as well, which
we'll
I can leave
here
in studio. Exactly. Which people can contact me directly on in relation to any of the older people services or anything as well that people think we should be doing. Because we're always open to ideas and that kind of thing as well in terms of trying to give the community what they need.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Yeah.
Now, it is Men's Health Week. Finally, a bit of attention on blooming men. Sick of listening about women. Should all be about the men. No,
yeah.
Carra House FRC, they're celebrating National Men's Health Week. It runs from Monday 9th to Sunday 15th of June, and you're doing it in association with Men's Health Forum Ireland.
Yeah.
And the slogan this year is Shoulder to Shoulder Connecting for Health. So is this your booklet, or is this sort of part of the week, the couple of weeks more, oh, sorry, the week more generally, or what are yous doing for mental for Men's Health Week?
Okay, so what we're running a couple of different events in-house, and then Bill Vaughan, our one of our board members who also works for the mental health services with the HSE, is doing a walk in football as well on Tuesday. So I'll go through the event shortly. But this book, which I think is fantastically done, I've had a look through it, is...
Looks a bit like Dermo on the front.
I know. Dermo. They had to put a handsome man on the front, you see.
Go on.
But it's brilliant because it's put together by the Men's Health Forum Ireland. And so anyone who's running any events for the week can avail of these booklets for free, and then we can then pass them on to our service users and the wider community.
So to give you an idea, tip one, food for thought, talks about eating healthy, talks a little bit about your weight, talks about how you can fix problems as well. And actually there's quite a useful pyramid that shows you, you know, the foods that, and it might not be as obvious as it seems, the foods that are good for you as part of a balanced diet, and those that are not, you know, the practical. It's not a book, you know what I mean? It's information.
Yeah.
Tip two, let's get physical. So what's the benefit of exercise? How can you exercise? You know, something as simple as using stairs instead of lifts. Often we associate exercise with getting a yearly membership with the local gym, blah, blah, or, you know, doing a 5K. But there's good practical stuff about, you know, sometimes just the choice of the stairs over the lift means you're not, you know. So it's very accessible stuff. And then it's onto mental health and so on and so forth.
That's,
you know,
right.
I mean, it's not in your face. It's just useful info.
No, it's kind of a, it's like, it's done in the style of like a, like, as you can see, as a comic almost. And we do have these little, wallet size, like almost like flip card things that have like a few of the different pointers from it, like the key points from it that people can have in their wallets as well, which is nice and handy. But no, they're just a lovely resource, and like that, they're bright, they're easy to read. There's nothing, you know, like quite strenuous about it. It's, you know, you can dip in and out of it, check out different pages of it. You don't have to read,
I think,
you know.
Some of it's food for thought. Triggers an internal conversation or an internal or a conversation in the house, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of it's practical, but it covers an awful lot. You know, socialising, join a men's shed, do whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
If you're of a certain age, get involved with Carra House, you know, and what the work that you do. It's just look after yourself, you know?
Yep, absolutely. So to that end, Monday, I should mention as well, every Monday from 11 to 1, we do have a men's shed that meet, and it's more coffee and conversation, coffee, tea and conversation, and they really, really enjoy it, and it's quite a big group that meet, and they just
that's
sit,
every Monday yeah?
every Monday okay. They just sit and chat, and you know, like I sometimes feel bad because like with the women, they kind of are more into like facilitators and having kind of like different maybe things to focus on or whatever. But with the, and I have offered it, but you know, like I think they're kind of more, no, we're happy enough to sit here and chat and just kind of be in each other's company and that. So we didn't want to kind of steer away from that too much because that is the feedback that we've gotten. So we're going to just kind of do a coffee morning on Monday with, and kind of widen it to invite everybody in the community. And then to give it that kind of health element, we will be offering free blood pressure checks as well.
Which is something that is really important. Blood pressure is, you know, there's some really, really scary stuff that's out there that you think, oh my God, I hope I never get that diagnosis or what have you. But blood pressure is one of those things that over 50% of the population of a certain age have. High blood pressure, sorry, yeah. We all have blood pressure, right?
Yeah.
And also, too, we are blessed in that it is one of the most treatable things. So if you do have high blood pressure, which is putting pressure on your heart and your brain and elsewhere, you can just get a tablet that you take that in most cases brings it down to a normal level.
Yeah, absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
But it's sort of, and I used to be like this, this is why I feel I can speak with a bit of authority, it's sort of like the big bad wolf, you know, oh, I'm not doing that. Like, I know fellas won't get the blood pressure check because they don't want to deal with the fact that it might be high.
I know.
But that makes no sense. Trust me, as a, I can't use the words to describe myself that I would off air because it wouldn't be politically correct, but let's just say... Let's just say I'm tapped.
Authoritative. That's enough.
Say I know what I'm talking about, right? So go along, get your blood pressure checked. And there's very little in that. There's very little in that that you have to be worried about. You might be told to go and get a 24-hour blood pressure monitor off your GP. Well, that's great, because then if your blood pressure's high, get a tablet and you know what's going on. So Bill Vaughan's going to be giving a chat on that as well, talking about mental health services as well.
Yeah.
And this booklet that we're talking about is going to be available on the day as well.
It will, surely, yeah, absolutely. So that's our Monday, and I'm
where is that, by the way? In
Cara House, okay, sorry, obviously. I should say that, in the Cara House drop-in room. You know, I don't like the term drop-in room because it doesn't really justify what the it's like a really big, really bright and airy sitting room.
Yeah, I know.
Kind of give almost, you know, like an impression that it's not inclusive to everyone in the community. You know, that kind of thing. But anyway,
it's a phraseology. It's a phrase, and there are actually some phrases that I would love if we could come up with different ways of describing them.
Yeah,
and I don't mean Cara House. I mean us as a society, because things have switched around a little bit, and people might think a drop in is something else, and it doesn't sound very sexy. But anyway, it is very very sexy, and it's a big open it's a big open space for you to call in, have a chat, and there's lots of men there in the exact same boat as you are, all very friendly, all just looking to chat to other fellas as well. And you can get your blood pressure checked if you want. By the way, you don't have to. Let's
no,
be clear
absolutely.
On that.
We're offering it. It's
offered
compulsory.
As a service. Exactly. So don't, if that's just not where you're at, don't let it preclude you.
Yeah.
Right, Tuesday the 10th then. Bill Vaughan's back at it.
Okay, so Bill, as I mentioned, is one of our board members and works for HSE Mental Health Services. So he actually has put this together, this walking football match at 2 p.m. at the community centre. Now, he did tell me to mention that if anybody is interested in putting a team together or wants to join a team, that they should email through to myself at befriending@carahouse.ie, just to say, because I think they have quite a lot of people who are interested, and so to avoid disappointment. But then you can go along to support and just enjoy the crack. Like I say, 2 p.m. at the community centre, and it is a walking football match, so a low strain football. You might be quite good at it if you want
to run. I'm an idiot, right? I can't walk anywhere. So say I park my car 50 feet from some... I can't walk that 50 feet. I have to run it, you know? Like, I'm an idiot like that there. And yet Aaron, who's only, like, 19, he walks so blooming slow. And I'm like, come on, hurry up. So I have to run. So I'm not sure. I give me a year or two. Although the way my hip's feeling today, I might be at it. But
you're
anyway,
like a fitness queen.
Yes, I'm a bit of a diva, a fitness diva. Right, so that's at 2. There's lots of people taking part. I presume it's 5-a-side. It's not down here, but...
It's a 7-a-side,
actually.
7-a-side,
is it? Okay, sorry. Yeah. So if you want to get 6 other guys along together for yourself, you want to enter a walking football team for this Tuesday, the 10th of June, get in touch with Bill, befriending@carahouse.ie. Bit of fun. Right, Wednesday then.
So Wednesday is, we have a bus trip going to the Iosis Gardens and Sanctuary out in Muff. So it includes a kind of a tour of the gardens as well. I haven't been there before myself, but I've heard.
Just have a Google of it.
I've heard it's very healing sort of place, you know. So it's anyone's welcome to go. Well, I have obviously there's limited spaces. Sorry, I should mention, but it's only €5, and you get the bus out. The tour of the gardens. There's also facilities on site if anybody wants to get themselves a cup of tea or coffee or a scone. And we'll take you back on the bus then back to Carra House. So we're probably leaving at around 10:30 in the morning, and we should be back about 3:00. So it's just a few hours in the morning to get out, fresh air. And I believe the weather next week is supposed to be fantastic, so it might be all the better.
Don't make promises you can't keep.
I didn't. I said I believe.
Yeah. I'm seeing some pictures here. It actually looks really nice. Okay. Yeah. So that's on Wednesday. As you can imagine, obviously that's going to be heavily subsidised because it's really quite inexpensive, €5.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So you can go to the Oasis Gardens and Sanctuary from Carra House, 10:30 a.m, coming back at about 3 p.m. A guiding tour of the gardens is included, facilities on site for a cup of tea or what have you. As you can imagine, spaces are limited. If you're interested in that, befriending at carrahouse.ie. And I suppose, too, go to mhfi.org for more information about men's health, ECSSRA.
That's it, exactly.
Yeah, where can we get this book?
Well, I have left a few actually in the reception here for anyone who's kind of going to be kind of passing through the mountaintop. Otherwise, we have a load of them in Carra House, and I imagine they probably will have them in local resource centres as well around the county.
Okay, great stuff. Anything else, Katie? Is that us?
Only that it's been a pleasure, as always. Okay, thanks
nice
for having
to come
me.
Come back up.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You miss the place?
Well, I miss you, of course.
You must have emotionally moved on from here at this point, though, have you? I'd say Fionnuala's even forgotten we've existed now. She's only gone a day.
I know. Well, that's it. But you know, we just used to talk all the time. We don't talk anymore.
It's so funny. Okay, listen, Kira. I don't know why I said Kira.
Oh, my
Kira?
God. You don't even
Kara,
know my
name. Kara, that's
you don't even know my name anymore.
I do. I was thinking of Kara, and I said Kira, because Katie, Kara and Katie's Kira. So that's it. Katie McGee, Active Age Coordinator at Carra House Family Resource Centre. And, you know, I think we walked through that, in a way people can pick up the info. But if anyone wants to check anything about sort of, you know, Carra House, some of the events that we've talked about, again, what's the best way to contact? Isn't it, all through befriending at carrahouse.ie, or give us a call and we'll pass on this mobile number as well, yeah?
100%. Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you kindly.
Arigainiwa.
It's been a while.
We'll be back after these. Right, so some seismic activity in US politics, and the way it is now, it's sort of like global politics. I remember ages ago on this show predicting, and I'm not unique in this, I think lots of people did, that eventually, you know, the world's richest man and arguably the world's, most powerful man, or certainly one of those with the biggest ego, that they would clash, that they would fall out. But I didn't anticipate it would be so spectacular, I'm not going to lie. Josh Wheeler's a PR expert at B Broadcast. He joins us now. Hey, Josh, good morning to you.
Hey, Greg, how are you doing?
I'm all right. It's very hard to assess. Like, I literally have eye strain from switching between Truth Social and X at this point. And, the speed in which the relationship between Donald Trump and Elon Musk has broken down is really quite remarkable. And I think particularly when Elon Musk stated that Donald Trump was on the Epstein, in the Epstein files, And also, too, given the fact that we know he knew this as he spent hundreds of millions to get this man elected, it's not quite the flex he thinks it is, I don't think. But, I mean, could you have ever anticipated it could get so messy so soon?
I think the reality is that the short answer is yes. I think a lot of people felt that this was, you said in your intro, that this was always perhaps going to go one way. You're dealing with, you encapsulated it perfectly, you're dealing with two mega egos, and in one situation that can be really useful. You kind of need these maverick characters to be driving things forward, and whether you agree or disagree with the political viewpoint, that can be really useful. But two together is only ever going to go one way. They're going to smash and they're going to crash at some point. If they can work together, then that's a different thing. But ultimately, as we've seen overnight, this is ultimately about ego. But the really grim thing, I think, is we're seeing right now trade wars raging across the world. We're seeing real wars raging across the world. And you've got two of America's most powerful figures, the world's most powerful figures, spiraling publicly. And I just think if this is the message that America, the free world, is sending out there to difficult characters that we're having to deal with, it just says that there's chaos at the heart of US leadership, and it impacts all of us wherever
we are. Yeah, for sure. And it impacts Donald Trump's foreign policy because it's such a public humiliation. Very unlike Trump last night at the end of a press conference, he refused questions. And you could see he seemed to have been visibly shook by some of Elon Musk's postings on X. So, you know, I mean, the ramifications for this are huge. It's not just, you know, two fellas falling out, ironically, during Pride Month. But anyway, it's not just two fellas falling out, right? it's much greater than that, Josh.
It really is. Trump looks like he's being undermined. Well, it doesn't look like he is being undermined by someone he once celebrated. Musk looks volatile rather than visionary.
Unhinged.
Mm. You know, you have social media ablaze with memes. And I think in a weird way, Musk sort of benefits from that. Mm. In a sense of he's seen as this now sort of maverick character. Whereas for Trump, who, you know, has been that maverick character and to an extent it has been celebrated, you know, this is the second term. He is almost kind of being buffed, and the conference you talk about where he's not wanting to answer questions, it's because he is knocked and shocked by this. They both want to be the star and they're both trying to go about it in their way. The big issue is it's the trickle down effect, right? So Tesla overnight has had huge amounts of money wiped from its share price. That's significant.
He is definitely going to, in the next short while, have to be jettisoned from X. I don't think he can fight, whatever about his role in Doge, I really don't think he can fight this battle with Trump and remain as the head of Tesla or the face of Tesla, because he's already peed off Democrats and people of a certain political leading. He can't also go for the other half of the demographic as well. So I can't see how he can stay on in that role, Josh, and be involved in this public spat with the President of the United States of America, let's not forget.
It wipes, you know, the businesses that he runs, in particular Tesla. X is one thing in the sense of, I suppose if you look at what X has become, what Twitter was and what X has become, in a way, you know, thinking from a positioning point of view, this is sort of quite a positive place. You know, we're championing free speech, getting the truth out there, all of that kind of stuff. Things that you would perhaps expect from a truth social rather than what Twitter was. In a way, that kind of works. But for Tesla, this is something, I mean, we've seen the sales just fall off a cliff in Europe. We've moved from a position where the president was effectively doing an advert for Tesla outside the White House to, you know, almost kind of mocking Tesla, mocking sales, you know, talking about, you know, how the guy that's leading this didn't get what he wants, so he's throwing his toys out of the pram. I think if I was Tesla, if I were the shareholders at Tesla, and I think this will have been happening for some time, I would be asking some serious questions. But, you know, the real challenge for Tesla isn't necessarily Elon. It's what happens next. Because even if you remove Elon, that perception and that mindset is going to be in there. Like, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
If you could, would you buy a Tesla?
No, not at this point. I don't think so. I think there are probably other electric cars that are nicer. But I agree with you. But also, Josh, you know, we as the public have short memories. And I think 6 months on post-Musk with sort of with a different direction. Perhaps maybe they could recoup some of it. But I think, and we're talking an awful lot about sort of the PR element of it, but politically, mm-hmm. I think this is quite seismic because Donald Trump was elected on division. So in other words, he got 50% of the population to think how he thinks. And that meant you hated someone who didn't vote for Trump if you voted for Trump or vice versa. Now we're seeing a split of the 50. And what people, supporters, your likes of Joe Rogan and others are going to have to decide is who do they choose? Because Elon Musk is talking about a third party in a particular direction. And he is effectively saying, if you voted for Trump, I've turned my back on him now. Now you have to choose between the two of us. And that's more of a political thing. But I think that is a rebirth of politics. And I think that's how this is going to play out in the next while, because the divide is being split in two now. And I don't know how that goes or where Democrats go from this. How do you deal with this, though? I mean, how do you even deal with this from a PR perspective? They don't care, do they? Because Elon Musk has his own PR company, right? He's got 220 million people that will make him feel correct. And Donald Trump is, shouting into the wind on Truth Social. But he has the media, the mainstream media.
Yeah, I think the point you make about the power of X and the role that Musk has played. You know, we've seen things here in the UK. We've seen things in Germany. We've seen all of this kind of political posturing using predominantly money. And I think that's possibly a big question that we all need to be asking ourselves wherever we are. From a PR perspective, I mean, it's certainly not a client that I'm going to be going after anytime soon. But I think ultimately, if there is any advice, the first thing that anyone needs to be trying to do is to stop fueling the fire and try to regain some kind of control of it fast. Somebody has to be an adult in the room. The crazy thing is we're talking about the president of the United States and the world's richest man.
Even craziest thing is the person that seems to be showing most restraint is Donald Trump. Words I never thought would come out of my mouth.
They're both leading the story, and I think their egos are going to, you know, we're going to keep seeing this sparring match. Spar is probably not even the right word. We've got, you know, just battles happening, but they're feeding it. They're not leading it. The smartest move, I think, is to try and literally shift away from conflict and get into containment. If it were me, you know, I'd be trying to get all of their people. I don't think it's a right move at this stage to get them in the room together. But for Trump, I think It almost feels like a strategic reset. You said he put him there. You know, this is a big part of his election. You know, people liked the kind of the sexy, cool, fun aspect, you know, anarchic element of Musk into what is quite boring politics. Yeah. But I think Trump, in a bizarre way now, has to try and distance himself from that a little bit. And I dare I say, statesman-like-esque, yeah. Who knows? But you
the
need
thing
something
is,
more presidential.
And I agree with you, Josh, but the problem is how do you put the Epstein genie back in the bottle? To pull that one out, three or four tweets into the spat, it's very hard to undo that. Trump very easily could reconcile, but Elon Musk went all in. He used his Trump card right at the very beginning, and I don't know why he might, but he's going to find himself, it's very hard to walk that back, isn't it?
No, it is. It is very hard to walk that back. And I think, again, you are dealing with people that are people's egos that are being rocked and shocked. We saw, I don't know if you saw the conference. I thought it was incredibly interesting. A journalist asked Trump a few days ago, this is how seismic everything is, a few days ago about the phrase taco, about him like kind that. Of turning away on policy. And his response was, he was hurt.
Oh, yeah.
He was hurt by this. And that proves how kind of ridiculous things are. I think when you think about the Epstein situation, there's kind of two things at play. One, Trump is going to obviously be personally affected by that. His own personal brand is affected by that. But on top of that, there is the notion and the move, and I think Musk even hinted at this, you know, the Democrats will seek to kind of move towards things like impeachment, perhaps. The interesting thing is, I think, when you try to take a step back out of the politics and the sort of the reality TV-esque nonsense of this, is if you take a look at social media and you take a look at these kind of exposés, when I woke up this morning and saw those tweets, I've seen those tweets before. And I feel like a lot of people have seen those tweets before. There is this new difference of this feeling like a new thing, but actually on social media, this has been there an awful lot. As well as Musk having replies with him and Ghislaine Maxwell.
Exactly. So but also to Josh, Musk, but also what's interesting is in talking about PR, I think Elon Musk brought up that to sort of tap into the 4chan, Pizzagate, Trump stuff. He knew what he was doing. Yes. All right, brilliant stuff. Thanks so much for your time. Josh Wheeler, PR expert with B Broadcast.